From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, religious hostility spreads. Yale University has decided to pull funding from students who work with Christian nonprofit legal organizations which adhere to a biblical view of marriage. Members of Congress are taking notes. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas is reportedly opening a subcommittee investigation. A member of the House Education Committee that has been active in trying to protect the freedom of speech and thought on university campuses, Michigan Congressman Tim Walberg, joins me from the House floor in just a few minutes. And if educational institutions are not already hostile enough to biblical views of morality, Nancy Pelosi, well, she wants to make it even worse with the Equality Act, which is being debated in Congress as we speak. The measure would add the categories of sexual orientation and gender identity to the list of protected classes in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. FRC's Peter Sprigg joins me about how the Equality Act equates Christian ethics with hatred and bigotry. Also, will members of the news media continue to align themselves with the Southern Poverty Law Center now that they've been exposed as nothing more than a con operation? Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action, will be my guest. And, of course, there's more trouble brewing for the SPLC as Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton has called upon the IRS to yank the SPLC's tax-exempt status. We'll talk with Senator Cotton later in the program. All right, Yale University has decided to pull funding from students who work with nonprofit legal organizations that hold to a biblical view of marriage and human sexuality. Now, this is just the latest case of religious hostility on university campuses. It's spreading. Joining us now is Congressman Tim Walberg of Michigan. He represents the 7th Congressional District. He serves on the Education and Labor Committee, the Energy Committee, and the Congressional Prayer Caucus, along with the Values Action Team. And he's been actively working to defend the freedom of speech and thought on college campuses. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, it's good to be with you. I appreciate you taking up this issue, as you normally do, letting people know that the challenges we face in a country where in the past this was just accepted out of hand, that traditional values and religious freedom and First Amendment liberties were the accepted practice.
Well, Congressman, I know this is a private university, and, you know, we're all about allowing people to do what they want to do, but we're seeing here increasingly people being targeted for their faith, and that's something that you've been very aggressive in defending. What are the options here?
Well, it seems today that if you are Christian or Jewish, your faith and your values can be targeted to be relinquished and give up all of your basic values for any other thought process, religion, value system, moral system, and you are a bigot or whatever if you take the wrong stance there. So what I'm looking at here is an institution of higher education that has distinguished itself, at least by reputation, as being a place of high academic achievement as well as a diversity. And yet, in this case, they're saying if you happen to want to do an internship with an organization that is specifically in place to make sure that religious values, traditional religious values, are upheld and allowed in the free marketplace, you can't be an intern that receives any type of funding from the normal process at Yale University. I mean, that's ridiculous there. I mean, if you can do that, then why should someone who would disagree with my principles, my religious standing, my viewpoint of morality, of marriage, et cetera, why should they be able to receive funding from that institution if it goes against diversity as well? So yeah, I think it's time that we wake up to this. Christians, myself included, aren't asking for this to be a society that doesn't allow diversity. But we're saying, don't step on our freedoms and our values either. Let us have that in the free market of ideas. As a Christian, I want to express my faith in love and compassion and comity toward many, many people, even if I disagree with them. But I don't want to be forced to agree with their positions and be forced to accept that without making any statement.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're talking about here. We're not talking about them being discriminated against, but rather students who adhere to that traditional view of human sexuality. And just for a context here, Congressman, I know you know details. I want to share this with our listeners. This all stems from a ADF attorney being invited to speak on the Yale campus about the case of Masterpiece Cake Shop, which, by the way, went all the way to the Supreme Court and prevailed because ADF was involved in it. And the LGBT group there on campus complained about it to the administration, demanding that they take action. And so now they have what they have done is they have with not complete clarity, but what they have done is, as you said, the stipends that would go to students who do internships where the money comes from the college would not go to institutions that have a biblical view of human sexuality. But it's also a loan forgiveness for those that have other financial transactions with the university. So this goes much further. And I guess, Congressman, you know, some people would say, well, it's just the issue of, you know, LGBT stuff. But universities, and this is the number one law school in America, and they shape a lot of the views in our court systems today and in the legal world. What if it's some other issue? I mean, what if it's they have a different view of the Second Amendment or climate change, and an institution defends the Second Amendment or doesn't subscribe to their view of climate change? I mean, where does this stop?
Where does it stop? But also even more closely, when does it come to the point that you will not be accepted into Yale Law School simply because you hold the standards and you did an internship with ADF one summer?
Right.
I mean, that we're looking at a total blocking of independent thought, First Amendment liberties, constitutional liberties in this country. And you're right to point out that ADF won their lawsuit in the court of law. The way we do it in this country, the beauty of this country, in that we are a nation of laws, and whether you like it or not, and there are plenty of court decisions I don't like, and yet we live under them. You just think of Roe v. Wade. I don't agree with that. That overstepped the bounds. It went beyond the state's rights and the 10th Amendment, but it is what it is right now, and we have to contend with that. But in America, we do that by laws, legally, peacefully. And we are diverse. We don't establish a pattern that you must believe one way in this country. If my ideas are strong enough, if my Christian faith as a citizen and as a legislator is strong enough, I ought to be willing to stand up and defend it and put it out in such a way that it draws people to it, as opposed to banging them over the head and saying, you must accept it or we will reject you. And that's what we're looking at now. And I think lovingly and compassionately, but strongly, we have to stand and say, no. This is not the America that made a little known country of individuals of Great Britain become in such a short time the greatest refuge of freedom in the world and opportunity because we did allow ideas and we had values while they were strong. Yet they opened up opportunities for many people of diverse viewpoints as well. We have to push back in a positive, strong way, or else we're going to lose the genius of what America is and truly what God was able to bless us because of in this country, following his pattern of freedom and personal responsibility.
Absolutely. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. My guest, Congressman Tim Walberg of Michigan, just stepped out of the House floor, off the House floor to join us. Congressman, I know you've been working aggressively on this issue of the freedom of speech and expression on college campuses. I mean, you've been championing that cause in the Education Committee. The Congress has taken up the Equality Act. I'm going to talk about that in the next segment. But that would almost codify into law this hostility that we're seeing on college campuses, but it would also be in the business and the marketplace. It would be everywhere.
Sure. And it's not equality. It's the beauty of the liberal mind is able to come up with beautiful titles for a piece of legislation that have no context with what they're actually doing. I just left the Energy and Commerce Committee. We're debating the net neutrality legislation. It's truly a government takeover of the internet. It's not net neutrality at all. And so when you talk about this equality legislation, it's not. It says everybody's equal except those that hold the traditional values, specifically Christians. That is not equality. We're not saying that there are people that have different points of view, even in the LGBTQ community. While I disagree with it, they have the opportunity to live freely in this country with equal rights that is given to any citizen, and right. yet trying to put themselves in a place where they take more rights and put those of us that don't agree with them down. That will go across the entire sector of academia, ultimately business, enterprise, commerce, and I think probably even in science that we're seeing already. If you disagree with certain so-called science ideas, you're wrong. And not only wrong, you're evil. You're holding this country back. So it's time again for us to stand up and say, I love you, man, but I don't agree with you. And so let's debate that issue and right. do it freely. And by the effort of strong ideas, I hope to win you over.
Right. And that's the difference. You know, you can, and this is where the two terms of love and affirmation have been conflated by the left. They think to love someone, you have to affirm the choices they make. We can love as God has told us to love without affirming the choices that
right.
people make.
Right. Absolutely. And we must. That's how Jesus responded. He yeah. loved, but he did not affirm. And what, you know, my life as a Christian and as a legislator, what God condemns, I can't condone. But I can love the same people he loved. And that yeah. was all.
Congressman, as always, great to have you on the program, Tim. Thanks so much for taking a few moments to join us.
Well, thanks for taking your stand, and great to be with you.
All right, Tim Walberg of Michigan. By the way, let me just read the school's public interest committee, going back to Yale, to that conversation. Their response to the demands of the LGBTQ group, they came out with their opinion saying that these law firms that hold to a traditional view of marriage, they would not give money to the students who do internships here. Here's what their statement. The logic of our broader recommendation is that Yale Law School does not and should not support discrimination against its own students financially or otherwise. Obviously, the law school cannot prohibit a student from working for an employer who discriminates, but that is not a reason why Yale Law School should bear any obligation to fund that work, particularly if the organization does not give equal employment opportunities to all our students, end quote. Now, I'm just wondering, did they even read their own statement? Are they not discriminating against their own students with this policy, those that don't adhere to their dogma of this gender confusion? Well, as Congressman Walberg said, we have to be firm and speak up and push back against it. Unfortunately, there are, I don't know how many, but there are some Christian students on Yale campus pushing back. All right, when we come back, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the so-called Equality Act. It's really the Inequality Act. Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies here at the Family Research Council, joins me next. Don't go away. You'll want to hear this.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juneau. Accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Happy birthday. In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Hey, let me remind you, you know, yesterday we had Congressman Steve Scalise on and Congresswoman Ann Wagner discussing the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. The fact that that discharge petition is now active, 218 signatures needed to move that forward. You need to call your member of Congress and make sure they sign the Scalise discharge petition. The number is 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. And by the way, if you have the app, if you have the Stand Firm app, it makes it a lot easier. So if you have not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, do so. Go to the App Store. And you can also help us send a very visible and strong message to Nancy Pelosi with the Baby Hat campaign, End Birthday Abortion. Find out more about how you can be a part of that. Go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, we were just talking with Congressman Tim Walberg about the religious hostility on college campuses. But this could get a lot worse, and it would not be contained just on college campuses if Nancy Pelosi and her team are successful in moving the Equality Act, so-called Equality Act, forward, which enshrines into law, basically, this special protections for gender identity and sexual orientation. Joining me now to talk about this and how this equates Christian beliefs with hatred and bigotry is FRC's Senior Fellow for Policy Studies, Peter Sprigg. Peter, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to
welcome
be back.
Back from Italy. You were just over there with the World Congress of Families speaking.
That's right. That's correct. Yeah, in Verona, Italy, in northern Italy.
Right. You had to go without me this time. Last time we were in Rome.
We went to Rome a few years ago, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But, and you tell me the pizza is better there.
The pizza was good in Verona, and some of the other food was good too. You know,
I liked the gelato there in Rome.
That I didn't get any of that. That was one thing I missed out on.
But. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, enough of the food. You've overcome jet lag, I think.
Yes, I'm doing okay.
Well, let's jump right into this issue of the Equality Act and how that would essentially take, Christian values, traditional, I would say, this is nothing new, Christian moral ethics as it pertains to sexual behavior, it would make it really equate it with bigotry and hatred.
Well, that's certainly true. And this is one of the things that people need to understand is that this type of law is not morally neutral. Sometimes the people who promote something like this say, you know, oh, you Christians can believe what you want, but you can't impose your beliefs on the rest of society. But the left has gone way beyond that now. They are imposing their beliefs on the rest of society. That's what this bill would do. This is not just some sort of neutral treatment of individuals. It's imposing the ideology that says that it is morally wrong to disapprove of homosexual conduct or to disapprove of transgender conduct.
We always hear about not discriminating against, you know, people based upon their gender identity and so on and so forth. What we're talking about here is everybody in America has rights and protection. But some have extra protection. They have special rights, which is what they're advocating for here, is special rights that would trump your religious freedom rights.
That's right. I mean, the term, usually people talk about civil rights. It's a little bit misleading. The term civil rights ideally should be reserved for our constitutional rights, the right of free speech, the right to vote, and so forth. Those are rights that belong to everyone, and people have never been denied those because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. But when we're talking about this kind of non-discrimination bill, we're talking about the right that we're essentially talking about is the right to sue somebody if you feel like you've been mistreated. And that's the special right that we give to some people and not to other people. And that's what basically the homosexual and transgender activists are seeking through this Equality Act. This bill would amend virtually every federal non-discrimination law, not just in the area of employment, like the previous bill they used to push, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. They couldn't get that through, so instead of proposing something more modest, they proposed something more massive and more extreme that would apply not only to employment, but public accommodations, housing, credit, every conceivable realm.
So, Peter Sprigg, explain how this would affect the average person out there in America, the Christian who believes that marriage is the union of a man and a woman.
Well, one example, of course, we've seen in a number of cases is the people in the wedding industry, like Jack Phillips, who took his case all the way to the Supreme Court. Fortunately, he won at the Supreme Court, but not with kind of the sweeping endorsement of his religious liberty or his freedom of speech that we might have hoped for. So people who are in business and do not want to participate in celebrating activities that they disagree with, such as in his case of same-sex wedding, those people would have no recourse under this because public accommodations is included and it is a federal law, and they would presumably be subject to this. So that's one example of people in small businesses would be required to affirm homosexuality and transgender.
What about in government contracting or even beyond that? If a company has a let's say Hobby Lobby, a statement of faith. Now we saw them in the contraceptive mandate, but what if they had a statement of faith regarding sexual behavior within their, like the Family Research Council does?
Yes.
You know, we have a statement of faith that you adhere to biblical standards of morality. What happens there?
Well, there's a good chance that they would be in trouble. I mean, they could be sued. Again, the real danger is that people would be taken to court here and would have very little defense. I mentioned the end of what they used to push. That bill at least had some limited religious exemption. The Equality Act is very aggressive. Not only is there no religious exemption in this bill for any of its provisions, but it explicitly overrides the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
All right, Peter, we're up against a break. I need you to hold right there. We're going to come back and finish this on the other side of the break and then also talk about what people can do to address this. Peter Sprigg, my guest, still to come. Sarah Perry joins us, as well as Senator Tom Cotton. A lot of Washington Watch still to come, so don't go away. Don't touch that dial. We're coming right back.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What?
What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influences weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app. Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Still to come, we're going to be talking about the Southern Poverty Law Center. The center is facing more trouble. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas sending a letter to the IRS yesterday calling on the IRS to withdraw their tax-exempt status based upon the revelation of their con game. We're going to talk more about that with him later. But first, Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies here at the Family Research Council, joins me about the so-called Equality Act that is currently being debated before Congress. Now, Peter, you have a paper you've just written kind of on this whole topic of human sexuality and this interchange here.
Right. Well, I was going to mention one of the things I think that it kind of underlies a lot of the support that some people have for these sexual orientation, non-discrimination laws in general, is a belief that sexual orientation is a personal characteristic that is innate and immutable, that it's inborn right. And it can never change, sort of like a person's race, and therefore that's why they should be protected from discrimination. Now, we've known for a long time that wasn't really true, but I've recently put together some of the information that's out there, some of the research on the fact that sexual orientation can change and the idea that it is immutable is a myth.
All right. I don't want to get too far down this path, but sexual orientation, which could be heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, but correct. Just because you have an orientation doesn't mean you have to act upon it.
Well, one of the things I talk about is that people think of sexual orientation as one thing, but it's really kind of an umbrella term for three separate things: a person's attractions, their behavior, and their identity. Those three things don't always match each other in one person,
But we even expect, like, for heterosexuals, there's an expectation, there has been, and we're kind of losing it, that they're in monogamous relationships, even though they may be attracted to other members of the opposite sex, it's not been considered appropriate to act upon that.
Well, that's true. That's another important factor, is that we're talking about characteristics that are essentially behavioral, and that when someone disapproves of homosexuality, what they disapprove of is not the person's character there. It's the choice to engage in this behavior. And everyone does have that choice, regardless of whether they choose the attractions or not. But even the attractions can change over time. That's what the research shows.
So with that understanding, when we're talking about the Equality Act, these are not immutable characteristics,
right,
that, you know, like race.
Exactly.
Which they try to equate this to. But when you look at the Equality Act, how would this affect, you know, the average listener out there that, you know, if this Equality Act goes into place, and how would their workplace change, or how would the mall change, or other places,
right,
where there are public accommodations?
Yes. Well, what I haven't mentioned yet was that this would – there's been debate, you know, in different states and cities about bathroom policies. Gender identity non-discrimination laws allowing men to use women's restrooms, showers, and locker rooms. This would impose that policy nationwide.
So like Target does that now of their own free accord.
That's right.
This would mandate it.
Exactly.
For everybody, even if you're a Christian bookstore.
That's correct. You would not be able to deny someone the right to use the facility that corresponds to their chosen gender identity rather than their biological sex.
What about churches?
Well, they're... You know,
there's no religious exemptions in this.
There's no religious exemptions. The question would be whether a church is considered a public accommodation.
In other cases.
Yeah, there would undoubtedly be cases about this. In fact,
given what we've seen, not to cut you off here, but given what we've seen as we've seen the LGBTQ activists target Christian bakers and stuff, I mean, do you not think they would push the envelope here?
Oh, I would not be at all surprised if they were to do that. That's one reason why some of our friends like Alliance Defending Freedom have encouraged churches to write their bylaws and so forth to be explicit about some of these policies, that they have theological convictions on this, in order to give a better defense in case of a lawsuit. But it doesn't guarantee, none of this would guarantee that you would win the case.
All right, before we're almost out of time again, your paper that you've written, that is a good resource for people to have to understand that this is not something that just is and cannot change. Again, tell people how,
right,
to get it.
The title is Sexual Orientation Can Change, Debunking the Myth of Immutability. It's an issue analysis available online at frc.org/sexualorientation. That's the easiest way to get to that.
I think we actually have a link to it at tonyperkins.com, so it'll be right there as well. Peter Sprigg, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great job.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, more homework for you. not only download Peter's paper and read it so you're equipped to push back on these statements that are blatantly false that they're making to support bills like the so-called Equality Act, but also call your member of Congress, 202-224-3121. Tell them to vote against the Inequality Act. That's what it is. All right, when we come back, the SPLC, they're in trouble. Coalition of organizations calling on the media to stop using them as a standard. And Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas calling on the IRS to withdraw their tax-exempt status because of the con game they're running. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. All right. Today, a coalition of 67 conservative organizations demanded that reporters end all partnerships with the Southern Poverty Law Center. In part, the letter reads, "Today, SPLC is aggressively anti-Christian and morally bankrupt, both inside and out. It attacks anyone who disagrees with its far-left agenda, smearing them with lies and grossly mischaracterizing their work. All the while, SPLC has also been imploding from within. SPLC has lost all credibility. We call on all media, corporations, social media companies, and financial institutions to immediately stop relying on their discredited and partisan hate and extremist list." Joining us now to talk about this is Sarah Perry. She is the director of Partnerships for FRC Action. Sarah, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, Sarah, this list going out, and I'm going to talk in just a few moments with Senator Cotton, who yesterday called upon the IRS to withdraw the tax-exempt status of the SPLC because of the revelations of what they've been involved in. I mean, I would think the media is going to have a lot of explaining to do if they continue to use the SPLC's standard of who's a hate group and who's not.
Oh, absolutely. And I will say I find it interesting in a political era in which Me Too is having a distinct moment that this organization that holds itself up to really be the paragon of social justice was experiencing internal rot during the last 3 decades. In fact, dating all the way back to 1994, the Montgomery Advertiser was shortlisted for a Pulitzer Prize because it wrote a groundbreaking piece on how the SPLC experienced a pervasive landscape of racism, of all things, behind its closed doors. Now, this is coming from an organization purportedly designed to and driven by its ideology to break up the Klan, to financially bankrupt the Klan. And this is sort of the hook on which Morrissey's hung his hat. But in an effort to continue stuffing his coffers, it seems that he was better at fundraising than he was actually appropriating his behavior to individuals within his own ranks. So to make sure that we give people a platform in the Me Too movement while relying on the SPLC to categorize conservative organizations as haters is the ultimate in hypocrisy.
So, Sarah, what's different about this? As you pointed out, you pointed to a series of articles that have been released over the last 20, 30 years that highlight the duplicity of the Southern Poverty Law Center, the hypocrisy, I should say. But this time it's different. They're being exposed. Morris Deeds, the co-founder, long time running this organization for 40 years, fired. Richard Cohen, the president, forced to resign. What's different?
Well, I think the fact that the allegations have come from predominantly left-wing sources and mainstream journalists who've uncovered this and it has taken off like wildfire really presents an interesting situation for those of us on the conservative sphere of politics, those who find themselves pilloried regularly by the SPLC, because we, for once, are not having to tell the story. And one of the most groundbreaking pieces, and there have been many, from CNN to the New York Times to the Los Angeles Times to, again, back to the Montgomery Advertiser, was a piece that broke in the New Yorker a few weeks ago, and this was by a former employee of the SPLC by the name of Bob Moser. He was a former staffer. He worked there in the early 2000s, and he was patently clear in his article about how much of a con the organization was running. They used to tell each other that hate pays. They used to say that there was a plantation mentality. There were references to the 13th Amendment. There were references to don't be alone with Morris Deeds because young women are not safe with him. The allegations are as bad and as widespread as you could ever anticipate. This, written by a former staffer who himself identifies as a homosexual, so not necessarily someone you would think would be aligned with a conservative perspective on the issue. But what we're seeing is that this is basic reality. It is ideological hypocrisy, and we are simply identifying for the mainstream media that to continue to rely on the SPLC makes them complicit in giving a platform to this kind of behavior.
Well, Sarah, while I guess I quote a biblical passage, but it has application far beyond. I mean, a good fruit cannot produce evil fruit, nor can a corrupt tree produce good fruit. So I would think the media now has to come to terms with the fact that it is clear that the Southern Poverty Law Center was a corrupt tree. And the fruit that it's
Absolutely.
Produced in terms of this hate listing, are they going to stick by this rotten fruit?
Exactly. And I think that is our ultimate aim and submitting this letter, and I even had a flurry of signatures, people coming to me afterwards saying, can we sign on as well? So the letter closed out at 67. I have as many as 71 who've expressed an interest. So that being said, there are people all across the conservative spectrum, and these are not necessarily all Orthodox Christians. They may be Orthodox Jews. These are people in national security realm, immigration reform. But they all recognize one thing. For one organization who is so hypocritical in their labeling of individuals and who does not dialogue, but rather uses facile labeling to be able to vivisect their political opponents, really makes them not only an unreliable source, but now, based on the fruit that we've seen coming from this rotten tree, Tony, there is no alternative for these media sources, for the major donors who have funneled money. It is time for them to cut ties once and for all with the SPLC.
Right, like Tim Cook and Apple, their CEO, who gave $1 million last year to SPLC. So you're absolutely right. Sarah, I know you're going to be in for me on Friday. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Sarah Perry, who heads up this partnership coalition with FRC Action, also my host on Friday. So she'll be in on Friday, I'm sure, giving you the latest on this issue with the Southern Poverty Law Center. And folks, if you're new to this and you haven't heard about it before, which if you listen, you would have heard about it before, but the Southern Poverty Law Center is nothing more than a money-making, and this is from the people on the inside, their own employees, former and current, a con game, raising money. But they're also, they've got a leftist agenda, and they're used as kind of an attack dog for the left. And one of the most blatant examples of this was up in Minnesota, where they went in with their anti-bullying, pro-LGBTQ program. The parents resisted. Now, this is SPLC went in with this program. The parents resisted. They said, we don't want to teach our children that homosexuality is normal. Well, the parents were prevailing. And so SPLC labeled the parents group a hate group, so that they would marginalize them, stigmatize them, and silence them in the media and in this debate over the program, the anti-bullying program, pro-LGBT program. The parents would not relent, and so they called the Justice Department. This is back during the Obama administration. They tag-teamed with the Justice Department, bringing them in to basically with a lawsuit, forcing the school then into a consent decree agreement. But this is Southern Poverty Law Center is a leftist group. In fact, we were just discussing, I guess last week, Tina Chin, who was the chief of staff for Michelle Obama, also kind of tied up in the Chicago thing with Jussie Smollett. She has been hired by the Southern Poverty Law Center to come in and clean things up. Well, they're also sitting on $500 million. Yes, you heard me correct. That's B, billion. $500 million, about 120 or so million of it's in offshore accounts. That's why it's described by former employees, current employees, as the Poverty Palace. They have more money than I think almost any nonprofit in America has. And given all of this revelation that has now come out, not through, local papers in Alabama and special journals that have written on them, even though they have credibility, now there's been an avalanche of exposés done on the Southern Poverty Law Center as former employees and current employees have spoken out, some anonymously, but some very publicly. And so as a result, yesterday, Senator Tom Cotton wrote a letter to the IRS calling upon them to withdraw the tax-exempt status of the Southern Poverty Law Center, where I believe he's going to be joining us here momentarily to discuss that. In fact, he joins us now. Joining us now is Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. He serves on the Armed Services Committee, the Banking Committee, House and Urban Affairs Committee, Intelligence Committee. I'm not sure what committee he doesn't serve on. Tom, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be on with you. Sorry I'm running a little bit behind. We just wrapped up business on the Senate floor today.
Not a problem. Thanks for taking a few moments to join us. Just laying the groundwork for what's the revelation of what's happened with the Southern Poverty Law Center in the last couple of weeks. Explain your motivation and the actions you took in calling upon the IRS to withdraw their tax-exempt status.
Well, Tony, the Southern Poverty Law Center was founded decades ago. It claimed it was dedicated to fighting the Jim Crow segregation laws of the Democratic Party of the era. And whatever successes it had decades ago, it has really turned into a left-wing racket today. Its main objective today is the serial defamation of its political opponents, organizations like the Family Research Council, like the Alliance Defending Freedom. In fact, someone entered the Family Research Council's offices a few years ago and started shooting, carrying Chick-fil-A sandwiches they planned to smear on their victims' dead bodies because the Southern Poverty Law Center had labeled it a hate group. Serial repeated defamation without a factual basis is not a tax-exempt purpose under our nonprofit laws, Tony. And that goes doubly true for the Southern Poverty Law Center and the revelations we've seen over the last few weeks. Now that we know, according to its own employees, it's a place of systemic racial and sexist discrimination.
So, Senator Cotton, any word yet back from the IRS as to whether or not they will take a look at your request?
Not yet, Tony. Obviously, we just sent the letter a couple days ago, and as you know, government bureaucracies take a little bit of time to act on these things. But if you look at the facts, I think there's a pretty compelling case that whatever the Southern Poverty Law Center did decades ago, it no longer deserves a subsidy from American taxpayers to do nothing but engage in the serial and repeated defamation of political opponents. I mean, look, we all in politics have opponents. We disagree with them. Sometimes we disagree with them vehemently. But that doesn't make them a hate group, Tony. That doesn't mean that you should target them and harass their donors and their volunteers, go into their offices and try to murder their employees. But the Southern Poverty Law Center has really done nothing in recent years other than engage in serial defamation, nothing other than apparently engage in systematic racial discrimination and sexual harassment of the young woman who worked there.
Well, I would add one thing they've been doing in addition to that, and that is raising money. They're sitting on a ton of money. I mean, they're sitting on $500 million. I mean, that's why.
They have $500 million, and Tony, about a quarter of that, as best we can tell, is parked in overseas accounts. Now, I don't know why a nonprofit would need to park its money in overseas accounts, but it's some pretty shady accounting practices, just like their so-called nonprofit work in which the Southern Poverty Law Center has engaged. I think it's very telling now that they fired their legendary founder, Morris Dees, who got paid $400,000 a year to apparently do nothing other than raise money and sexually harass young women around him, that the center has brought in Tina Chen to help advise and consult on their workplace culture. Remember, this is Michelle Obama's former chief of staff and the political fixer for Jussie Smollett in Chicago. I think it's very telling that the Southern Poverty Law Center is bringing in Michelle Obama's former chief of staff to help oversee just how they spend that $500 million.
I was just making that point. I think you're absolutely correct. Any interest, Senator Cotton, from some of your other colleagues as you've raised the awareness of this issue?
Yeah, very much so, Tony. I mean, I think many of my fellow senators have seen the news about the Southern Poverty Law Center, just hadn't given much thought to what action we might take. So I've had several senators express interest in my request to the IRS and said they'd like to follow it closely as well.
All right. Well, Senator, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for taking time to join us, and we'll be following this very, very closely. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, and I promise we will be following this very closely because I think the time has come for the Southern Poverty Law Center and their ability to smear those that they oppose on their liberal policy ideas. The time has come for that to end. And I think it's gotten the attention of a lot more people in the last few weeks. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.